Welcome to the Mom Magazine podcast, where we talk about everything from pop culture to trending topics. I'm your host, Amani, and you guys are in for an amazing discussion today about real estate during the time of COVID. I had the pleasure of interviewing international best-selling author and real estate investor, Lisa Phillips. Lisa is the founder of Affordable Real Estate Investments, where she provides step-by-step tools, online coaching, and training to turn Black professionals into rental property owners and help them to achieve financial freedom. In this episode, we discuss the different ways you can purchase properties, the 19 Black families that purchased the town of Toombsboro, Georgia, as well as her book, Investing in Rental Properties for Beginners. Stay tuned for more. We're now being joined by Ms. Lisa Phillips. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be on this podcast today. It's going to be fun.
It really is. I'm always interested in providing educational content for the listeners, and this topic today is just perfect.
So perfect.
So please tell us about your business. Please tell us about how you became the founder and what inspired you to found the Affordable Real Estate Investments business.
Right. So it was a couple of things, maybe three main things. I had gotten a foreclosure in 2009, and at the time I had a little money saved, but not enough to go the traditional route. And so after the foreclosure, I was like, I want to invest. The foreclosure came after just the 2009 recession. I was in a new town. I had purchased a property in 2006 at the top of the market in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas and Miami, Florida were the hardest hit and had the most depreciation. So by the time 2009 hit, it was like worth less than half, like 60% price decrease. And, you know, if you're buying a $300,000, $400,000 house and it's worth 20% less, there's not enough time to recover your money.
Right.
So at that point, it's a loss, and I had gotten laid off, and it was just a choice I had to make. Now, I didn't have, it was also, the other choices I had was not to stay there. And so what happened was I actually had purchased a condo out in Ohio where I had moved to the last job, and I purchased a $35,000 condo, and it was really cheap. My mortgage each month was like $340. It was so easy to maintain, and I had been paying, while I was in Ohio, I had been paying for an apartment that was more than that, right? And so I'm like, let me get this cheap condo, a two-bedroom. It was a nice part of town.
Right.
It was really well kept. It was built in 2001. And so I bought it, and I was like, hey, I like these houses that are cheap. Where are they? And then I went online to find out what people were saying about them. But it was a wall of don't do it. They're the worst. Those people, they're a headache. Da-da-da-da-da. They're trash. And there was something inside me in my spirit that said, you know what? These same people talking about these neighborhoods are the same ones who have said, your neighborhood was bad and trash and these people. And you lived in a neighborhood with hardworking people of all colors and races who went to work every day, came back, didn't make a ton of money, but they took care of their kids, their family, and their community. But because we're white, brown, and black, you know what I mean?
Right.
We had a stereotype. Because we didn't have a lot of money, we were supposed to be all crime-ridden, right? Like, in this country, some people are so entrenched in their classism, they don't understand that just because we don't have money does not mean we're happy, doesn't mean that we're criminals, it does not mean that we don't have a functional life, right? And a happy life at that. And I'll put it to you, we actually have more community in low-income neighborhoods than most of these high-end ones would ever have, to be honest, just because you have to rely on each other, and we're not all separated in our houses and not talking. So something in my spirit was like, all these people talking, I know for a fact that they don't know, they haven't taken the time to be discerning and look at individual neighborhoods, and they're lumping all neighborhoods together that are low income and minority. They're not, I knew they weren't looking at the facts. So I was like, look, I can't get a mortgage for 7 years because I had a foreclosure, but, you know, I make $70,000 a year. So if I take half of my paycheck and what I had in like my 401k, I can purchase one house a year. So that was my idealistic view of things.
Right.
But I was like, so let's do it, you know? So I can live on half my paycheck. I can do that. and that's where I went, I stepped four in. And so I had moved to D.C. when I got another job. And I was like, okay, so let's do this. And I looked up north, and I found that Baltimore, Maryland had these properties. still, I bought a house for $13,000. I spent another $20,000 fixing it up over a year. It was my first house, so don't judge me. I was new. So like, I would just go up there on the weekends. So it's just like, you know, if I added it up, it's like 3 months of Saturdays because I would just go one day a week.
Right.
And towards the last 2 weeks, I would stay overnight. But, you know, so it was like 3 months if I would have just went every day. But, you know, it was my first time. I learned a lot. And I had this beautiful Castleton property in a neighborhood that everyone thought would be very terrible. But I just developed a way of looking at things to be able to discern the truth, not stereotypes, not classism. Like, okay, is there actual crime on this block? You know, what are the actual rents on this block? You know, because being a Black woman myself who came from a low-income background, I'm not scared of my own people. So, you know, I was able to see what the majority of people who were preaching about real estate investing could not. And like I say, hey, if that's my advantage, that's my advantage. Because I actually found when I went to these neighborhoods, they're not always minorities, but when they were, it was very interesting seeing how, because I looked and I looked like them, and I came with a different mentality. I was like, you know, where did I grow up? Where are my parents live? Where do my cousins live now? I approached it with a different energy of, well, of course I'm going to give you a nice place. And of course you're a good person. And of course this is going to work out great. And it's interesting because of my background, I approached it so differently. And I'll tell you today, energy is something that you can quantify, but I'm telling you, it's because I approached it with that light and altruism and as well as the economics,
right,
that I also get that result back. And it's something in business no one wants to talk about, but I'm going to tell you, and anyone who works with me knows, the energy you put into is the energy you're going to get right back out. You know, it's not always just dollars and cents, although that's part of it. And so, yeah, it worked out. It was cash flowing. It was great. I paid it off within 3 or 4 years. And I was like, let's do it again for year number two. And so I found another house going into Virginia for $25,000. And I was like, this is a thing. So by the end of that, I had three houses under $35K. And I was like, this is it. So let me start telling people, because if you go online, it is mostly white, male, and affluent, who are the teachers or gurus, right?
Right.
They did not see what I could see. They did not have the capability of seeing what I saw because of who I am and my background, right? And so I was like, someone needs to start talking about this because there's people like me who are not made for corporate America who need to find their own type of income that they control that is not subject to the lens of a, you know, some of us just aren't made to be corporate. I'm not in any way, shape. I like the money, but I don't like anything else that has to do with it. Like, you know what I mean? Some of us are not fit for that.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I have to tell people because there's people who are just like me who want and need to get out. And this is such an affordable way to do it. You can do one house a year for 5 years. After five houses, you have enough to, like, if you quit your job, you're okay. You have money coming in. You have $2,500 coming in. You're good. And that's what my goal was, because at the end of the day, I was very happy with what I was doing because I could live sort of a little modestly where a lot of people cannot. And I was like, there's other people who are willing to do this work for 3, 4, or 5 years and just get to this point where they have $2,000, $3,000 coming in. It's not necessarily the most money in the world, especially if you're like a six-figure earner, but it's enough where you control yourself. And if you do lose your job for whatever reason, like now during COVID or this or that or layoff, you're okay. You have a steady, solid source of income. And I was like, I have to get this out there. And that's just sort of how it spread. I started talking about it, and a lot of people heard what was said and unsaid, right?
Right.
And, and the people who heard my call were mostly Black professionals. So if you go to my website, it says, you know, I help Black professionals. So those are the people who heard the call. I was talking to everyone, but it was certain people who were able to see what I saw and also profit with it and not be scared and bring a certain energy and wanting the community to do well, in addition to money and profit. And I thought it was a beautiful circle of, like, culture and life, to be honest, that we were creating. And we didn't need to wait on the government or anyone else. Like, we can do it individually ourselves. And then I saw people do 1, 2, 3, or 4, and then get their friends and family. And I was seeing this ripple effect. Like, we're individually making change at the individual level. And each of our lives were better off for it. And that's just something that, you know, you're here to help make impact like that. And I'm just really proud of it.
That is amazing. I mean, what an inspirational story from foreclosure to owning like over 3 houses, and now you're helping everyone. So that's amazing.
Yeah. And it doesn't need to, I tell people, you don't need 20,000 houses. You don't need to make 20,000 a year. Sometimes you think, oh, I got to be, like, no, seriously. When I got lost, I had $1,900 a month in cash flow coming in when I had gotten laid off in 2015. And that was enough for me to go, you know what? Let me start building this platform and business full time. It was not replacing my 6-figure salary, but it was enough, right? And I kind of tell people, we can start little. It's okay. You can have a goal of 1,000 in cash flow a month and then raise it to 2,000. And if you want, you can stop there or you can keep going. But I also like to tell people it's okay to be okay with a little.
Right.
As well as a lot. It's okay because that's still something and it still assists you in life and it still relieves pressure in your life. And, you know, I don't come from wealth. I mean, those are the people who generally are attracted in, you know, vibrate on the same frequency as me, you know. They don't either, so... Okay.
That's amazing. And I know, speaking of buying houses, I know that a lot of people were shocked and really excited for the 19 black families that purchased over 96 acres of land in Georgia. Essentially, they bought the whole town of Toombsboro, Georgia, which is amazing. How would you suggest that millennials be a part of real estate investments such as this? Like, do they have to be a part of real estate fund, or how would you suggest they go about it?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. So, when you say, sometimes when you're a family, it just hits differently. You want to own something and build, versus when you say millennials, I'm thinking singles who don't have sort of that, some of the grounding that a family can give you. Are you talking sort of like single set or people under 30 in general, single or married? Because it's just different. I work with different clients and there's a difference between my family, people who have families and what they're trying to build and how they want to build it versus I have people who are single and younger and they're a lot more aggressive and it's just a different energy. So are you talking just under 40 in general or like family versus no family?
Just people in general.
Okay, yes. So let me first off say the Toombsboro, the 19 black families, I don't know if they call themselves like the Georgia Freedom Fund, which is the nonprofit they created.
Yes.
Let me just say they are sparking change. Even in my own family, there's a group of black people, like 9 different families, who are looking to buy land in Texas now, and they are opening the floodgates.
Wow.
Okay. So what they're doing is like real time effect in my own life, right? Like my brother-in-law and my sister are now looking at land in Texas, looking a couple of firefighters, all families looking to get that independence from the system and not need anything except for themselves and each other and a common mission to get it done. So I just want to say I love what they're doing. I love that they broadcasted it.
Yes.
I love that they're so open and honest about being a black family and a black oasis. Sometimes you need to just say it, okay? For black culture, because we need the specialization. If you look at the data between immigration and segregation, it's different, right? And so I love that they do that. And so for millennials in general, you know, you really have to be very conscious, right? So on one hand, if you live in a place like New York or D.C. or California, trying to get a property if you're not a Russian millionaire is really hard, okay? Because they have tons of New York property. They really do. It's like buy the place up, right? $80 million this, $60 million this. But if you're just a normal person and you live in this very high-end area, like unless you go in it and a cooperative, or, you know, which is co-op, which is what they do out there, it's going to be very challenging, so just keep that in mind. So when I work with people who are younger, who live in, like, New York and D.C., what I find that we find properties long distance and out of state that they can't afford. So they might have $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 saved up, right? You know, you've been working a few years, you can save up money. It just depends on your job, your income. Then we find houses out of state, and then they might have 4 or 5 houses before they even think about their new job, buying their own house. But they have all this income coming in.
Right.
And they can move anywhere they want. So I found that that is an option as well. So they like the New York and D.C. jobs, which give them a higher salary, and take that higher salary, save money, and buy these lower-priced properties. And that's been working really, really well for them. So they're building up a fund where one day when they do get maybe a really expensive house where the mortgage is $5,000 a month, they're getting $3,000 in income from their rental property, so they have a nice buffer. And maybe they get a duplex, but now they can afford it, whereas if they hadn't put those down and was a little further afield and have been, you know, learned how to do it, and that's what I teach people to do, they would have been behind by the time they looked for houses, right? So it's really different. So I would say that if you live in a place where the houses are affordable, I would say buy your property like it's in your investment, an investment property for your first 3 to 4 houses. I did this, and each time I sold my properties, I got a nice profit, right? And so since it was my primary, I didn't have to pay any capital gains tax if you stay in it for longer than 2 years, which is great. And so I'm like, unless you come from money, so I always say this, you might come from money, right? Like Jay-Z might be your dad. Okay, so my advice isn't for you. Unless you come from money, buy your first few properties like it's an investment. And I've been doing this for 8 years. I have people who I've worked with. They're like, yeah, I live in a duplex. I love it. Oh, I live in a quadplex. Oh, I got a triplex. I literally have people been following me who took this advice. They're now investing with me because they have the money because they bought a duplex or triplex. Or they bought in a part of town that was up and coming, but their mortgage was it was a $65,000 house, and their mortgage was $400 a month. And so they were able to save money and also get appreciation because they knew how to read a market and they saw that it was appreciating. And so they can tap into the equity of their own home now and still save a lot because they didn't buy their dream home on their first property. They bought the one that was in the undervalued neighborhood and had potential. They could live in comfortably. And that's what I did. You know, I lived in the working class black neighborhood. And you know, guess what's the interesting? When you sell your house, those are interestingly enough the neighborhoods that have a lot of appreciation built in. So you can keep the property and just tap into the equity and rent it out, which I always prefer. I prefer people not selling. I prefer them tapping into equity and not selling. That's how you retain it. Right. That's how those people in New York who sold their brownstones for $300,000, if they would have kept it and just rented it out, you know, when the brownstones were $1.7 million, they would have been able to capture all of it. So that's why I say that. It's a way for you to capture everything and as it rises in prices. But that is what I would say for millennials who are younger. The co-opting is an option. Looking further afield to cheaper markets, or if you live in a market where they are relatively affordable, buy less than you can afford. I know they said you can afford $200,000. Trust and believe when you buy the $100,000 house, it's going to appreciate at a faster rate. Because remember, there's always more buyers for the lower price houses than there are for the higher end houses. What that means is that if you ever go to sell or there's equity, those houses are going to move faster and there's going to be more bidding wars at the bottom than they are at the really expensive $400,000 houses. That's just not how the makeup of this country is for most places. It's a lot more people can afford modestly than can afford at the top, right? You know, the 99%. And I found that people have done that had been very well served. If you give up their first few properties, that's how one day you end up. And you're like, yeah, I have $200,000 in the bank, right? Because you kept making these moves and buying less than you can afford.
Yeah.
And buying strategically like it was an investment, being a duplex, triplex, or just an undervalued neighborhood that was up and coming.
Oh, my God. Those are some amazing tips.
Thank you, ma'am.
So, you're welcome. So, is now a good time to buy a property since COVID has basically ruined our economy? Like, do you feel like down payments and closing costs are actually cheaper now?
Okay. It depends on the location. And also, what we had to do, if we're looking at markets to invest in, we have to see how renter or landlord friendly they were. So, on the renter and landlord friendly, but when we look at a place and we're like, well, we're considering this part of Pennsylvania, we have to look up and see how are they doing it. And some places are like moratorium for a year. So no evictions for a year, not just 3 months, not just 6 months, you know, and you have to consider that, where before we didn't have to look that up. And that's not the place you should invest, right? Because that if it could be extended a year, it could be 2 years, right? They're like, if all is the foreclosure, that's on you. And other places are like, well, there was 3 or 6 months moratorium, but now it's over and things are catching up. And that to me is a little bit more reasonable because that 6 months was enough time for people to, maybe you lost a job, maybe you got another job, because there is a lot of, you know, there were a lot of hirings too, depending on your location.
Right.
So that's something we have to look at now as a discerning investor that we were not looking at before, but you know, we adapt and we do it. And now that's part of our repertoire we have to check now. The other part is it depends on the market. In some market, a lot of investors are purchasing, which is very interesting. The prices aren't necessarily going down. In other places, they are going down because a lot of investors are flooding the market. So in that case, it really depends on the local market, who the owners are, and if they're trying to get out. In some places, a lot of people are trying to get out, and the prices are reflecting that, and it's a buyer's market, meaning they're willing to negotiate before you even do anything. And then in other markets, it's staying steady because a lot of investors are going in, they're buying. So it is market to market that we see it, and we have to get on the ground and start looking to see what the flow is. So in our price range, we typically look for anything $30,000 to $50,000. And we have been purchasing during COVID this whole time because at our price point, we can withstand a lot. You know, for one thing, we talked to the group, we noticed that all of the people in our homes were working class. They were basically essential workers, right? There were people who were working gardens. The gardener didn't stop. The water plant didn't stop. Right? They were blue-collar workers, right? You know, this didn't stop. Like, we found that there was an insulation from the economic issues because we were, like, the people in our neighborhoods were essential or they were Section 8.
Right.
So it's very interesting how servicing that working class actually protects you during economic downturns because they're the ones that are going to keep working. So we found that going on. So those neighborhoods were still pretty consistent in performing. Maybe one out of five houses with 20% had someone who didn't pay, but then, you know, when you read further into it, they were already a problem tenant anyway. So they were just like, okay, let me get a few months. You know what I mean? So that insulates it because it is the working class who work during pandemic, which is very interesting. And also, at our price point, we're already at the lowest price. So, I mean, it really doesn't go too much lower. So, you know, if you buy a $40,000 house and it's making $800 in rent, that's a good deal, regardless. I'm not going to wait, and, you know, we're not going to wait a year to see if a $40,000 house is $20,000 because someone else will take the $40,000 and make $800 a month all day. You know, you can cash flow $500-$600 a month. You know, you have a mortgage payment of $300. Like, come on, this is very straightforward. So in our price range, we have been going steadily, purchasing steadily. But, you know, more willing and more room to negotiate.
That's amazing. And I know you mentioned, mm-hmm. like, a lot of essential workers, and we're so thankful for them. But what do you think about the people that have lost their job or, you know, they've had their hours cut? What happens when you can't qualify for a traditional mortgage?
Well, that's always going to be an issue. One thing to do is to go the commercials loan route.
Mm-hmm.
And so with commercials, sometimes just ask the bank, like, they don't even pull your W-2 because it's not about you. It's about the business. It's about, do you have the down payment? And how much money does this house expect to make in rent? And they'll want to see from the seller, can you show us how much money they make in rent, right? And so in that case, people like me who are self-employed, it is just so much easier going to the commercial route than, like, the residential route. And so then it's not about your W-2. Some ask, some don't. So just during the process, before you get in the business with them, ask them, how does it go? Do I need to submit W-2? Because I don't have X and X, but you know what I mean? You can ask those questions beforehand and go with things that don't need that information because it's not a residential loan. It's about the assets, which is the house and how much money you're going to make.
Right.
Another thing to do, and FYI, most commercial people stay away from commercial loans because it's 35% down. But if you call it up, and I actually hire a virtual assistant and get my clients to hire a virtual assistant, they'll call 40 different banks. You'll find four or five or six that are like, yeah, you can just put 20% down. And all of a sudden, the down payment is more doable, right? You just have to do the groundwork and research to see who's willing to play. And I always outsource it because you don't want to be told no 35 times to get the five guesses. So I'm like, outsource that. You don't need that. Like, have someone else ask those questions, you know? So I also teach people how to outsource and get virtual assistants for the real estate business. So there's little things like that. You know, when you step up into this, that can help you do this while working a full-time job. Let me think, what else do we say for that? Okay, another thing is seller financing. So, for instance, I had a client who submitted a bid, and they submitted a bid, got accepted, but the appraisal came in $10,000 lower. They're like, you want to pay the extra $10,000? Like, no, I don't. And so we are counter negotiating at this stage, and it's like, okay, so we got this far. Would you be open to seller financing? Like, one in four sellers are interested in that. But if they are, some people want the whole money because they have something they want to do with it. Some people just want to get rid of the house. And if they want to get rid of the house, they like take like a $10,000 down payment, and you pay them $500 a month for, you know what I mean, you know, 15 years and getting passive income, or whatever it might be, the amortization schedule, right? And so then in those cases, one in four are willing because they like the passive income aspect and they don't need the whole lump sum, right? So that's also an option as well.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you kind of segued into my next question, which is commercial property. For the listeners that are business owners out there, what exactly is the 2% rule used in rental properties?
Oh, okay. This 2% rule is so funny because really you only get it in my income class. So,
an exclusive.
Rule, right. It doesn't really work except outside of my niche, but they were like, this is my niche at first. Now they're all trying to get on it. The 2% rule is theoretically, in order to make the best return on investment, and it basically works out for about 20% return on investment each year, roughly, is that if you buy a house, renovate a house, and all-in costs are $100,000, you want to hit the 2% rule for your rent. So you want the rent to be $2,000, right? 2%. Out of all-in cost of $100,000. And that's the ultimate goal. Now, let me tell you something that just doesn't, you're not finding houses that are $100,000 that rent for $2,000, okay? They rent for $800, $900, $1,000, okay? So what the funny thing is, in my income class, it's easy to find a $30,000 property that rents for $600, $700, $800, $900 a month. So that's the interesting thing. So we're two to three and a half percent pretty consistently. That is the ultimate. It does work out to, you know, 2% to about 3% return on investment each year that you earn back. And, you know, so 3%, roughly about 30%. So it's an interesting rule. I love it. It works in my income class, but it really doesn't work everywhere else because, and depending on the location, you know, $150,000 house, and it can be $1,000, or it can be $1,500, but you're still not really hitting the 2% rule, you know what I mean? So you're not hitting 3,000, you know, you're not reaching like $2,500 in rent, right? You're just not, unless it's like a very high-end area, and if it's a very high-end area, it's probably not $150,000 house, it's $450,000 house, right? So it's so interesting that they make it like a goal, and the only income class that consistently hits it is mine. But best believe, at the beginning, they had articles about my income class, and we called it sub-30K. They're like, sub-30K houses? What? Those are pigs. Like, literally articles about it. And I'm like, I mean, keep talking, keeping people out, and we're cleaning up. Because like I said, my investors heard my call. They weren't listening to that nonsense, and they've been doing great.
Right. So, what would be a good negotiable price for rental properties, would you say?
We look $30,000 to $50,000 pretty consistently. If it's a duplex, I'll go up to $50,000 to $80,000. So, 30 duplex or triplex.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, $30,000 to $50,000 per unit. That's what we hit. And that's affordable. You know, people pay more for their cars than I do for my rental properties, right?
They do. I believe it.
They do. That's why I don't drive fancy cars. Like, I'm not paying $600 for this stupid BMW because that's, like, two properties. I can't do it. I can make $1,600 a month off that. Once you know, you can't go back. You know, once you rent till.
Right. That's true.
You know, you can't get the blue pill. And so I say that because for anyone thinking it's too much, there's a lot of us that can afford it.
Yeah, and then, too, you can't, you know, live in your car. Well, I guess you could, but...
You can. That's a little awkward. Yeah.
Shelter is more important.
Right. Or just real income, right? So some of us, we need to be honest, some of us aren't made for corporate America.
That's true. Yes.
I am not. In no way, shape, or form. I say what's on my mind. I call people out. I don't want a brown nose. I don't think I need to be at work at 8. I'm like, I don't have any client meetings, so I can get here at 10 and leave at 7 and work on the weekend. They look at me like I'm crazy, and I'm looking at them like, you're crazy. You don't need me here. I do my work on my own time. It's very interesting, right? And so they're like, no. And I'm like, I think so, yes. I don't last long. So some of us just aren't made for it. And FYI, I wasn't wrong. I just wasn't traditional. Doesn't mean I was wrong at all. But some of us just aren't made to be a cog in a wheel. And you need to be honest if that's not you. And we tend to be better business owners. So if that's you, come on board, right?
So true. So true. So let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about your book. So you have a book called Investing in Rental Properties for Beginners. What inspired you to write this book?
Can I tell you for real what it was?
Yes.
Okay. It was a sequence of God events, okay? Because I really wasn't on my mind. I still even don't call myself an author. I call myself a book writer because it just wasn't part of my psyche. Are you listening? It's not something you just choose to do. So what happened was I found this YouTube, and this is for real what happened. So two things happened. On YouTube, I found this guy named Justin Perry, and he does these affirmations on YouTube. His thing is, you are creative. And he has such a good way of making these affirmations, and I just started listening to one, Passive Income. And I was like, every time you breathe, I make money. Like, money loves me, and I love, and it was like passive income is the ultimate type of thing. And he gets such a soothing voice, and the way he frames the affirmations are just so cool, and I really resonated with it. So I listened to him for 30 days straight. I'd listen to it during the day, I'd play him on repeat during the night, and I kid you not, 31 days in, maybe February, right before my birthday, the day before my birthday, the 21st day, I woke up and I was like, I gotta write a book. This is what has to happen. So it was not in my psyche before. And so before that, the other incident that happened was I was in this program where I met this marketing program. We were just teaching her how to market. And one of the guys was like a ghostwriter.
Oh, and wow.
He said about 6 months before, he was like, oh, you know, it's interesting. I ghostwrite for people who they're better than who else, the other people out there. Right? But it wasn't until they did a book that their standing and social authority and standing went up, and they can get speaking contracts just because they have a book and the others don't. And it was just something, because I'm not really into classes and session and stuff, and so it's just not something that's in my mind. But, you know, when I mixed it in with that, those passive income affirmations, that came back, and I was like, nice, that would set me as an authority. And it would make me seem a little less, you know, I'm not just talking, and I'm not just a blogger who is an experienced, but in the literary world, I am recognized. And that thought came to me, too, on that 21st day of listening to the affirmation. So I highly recommend everyone listening to those affirmations, because you'll wake up one day, and there's going to be something inside of you that you've always been needing to do, and it'll come right to the surface. At least 21 days, I'd recommend. And so that's why I did it. It was passive income, it was to increase authority so that I can reach more people and they took me more seriously, and also to get the word out. And I always planned on doing like a $5 book, and it's $5 on Kindle, you know, 14 for the paperback, but I always had planned on doing a book, and like, you know, this is like a great income stream, so I'm helping people, I'm showing them the light. So it was like a combination of different things, almost like faith and, you know, energy work with affirmations, creating your own reality, meeting the right people to put little thoughts in their head that you didn't take seriously until the right moment, and then it all came together. So that inspired the book, and so that was in February, and then I launched it by August.
That's amazing.
And yeah, that's cool. But, you know, when it comes from inside like that, and you're certain, and it's, like I said, that's why I know, like, spirit helped me with that. Because it was just, like, such a knowing that this was the next step. And being a young Black female, and I'm older than I look, I'll just claim that. And so people think I'm, like, in my 20s. I'm like,
that's good.
Sometimes being taken seriously, and my voice sounds, you know, I'm the person, when I was younger, they're like, oh, you sound like a white girl, right? Like, I'm not hurt. And so, because of those things, I actually need to be a little bit more austere to show that I can, in fact, help you. Just listen to what I have to say. What I say works, it's going to work for you. You just have to trust me. And so that's always something in the back of my mind and when I present myself, right? That I have to prove a little something to earn the trust. It's already there, but just in case those other factors might throw people off and have them think things about me that are not accurate. Like, oh, she's young, what can she tell me?
Right.
Because I was working with people at 31 and they were 50, right? And so I'm conscious of that. I'm okay with it, but I'm conscious that that might throw them off because they might want someone who, you know, they gel with more. And so the book was helpful with that. And also I translated it to Spanish. And, you know, it's interesting. You translate a book to Spanish, you're like, the Spanish version is available here. That actually does a lot, too, for people to have a little bit more trust and credibility. That, you know, it's one thing to be an author with a book on Amazon, but a Spanish translation, they're like, wow. And so both of those things, I didn't know any of this, right? I'm just being guided by spirit. But then I looked back and I was like, look at that. I didn't know that that's what people needed to perceive you as a certain thing, because I just don't live in that world. I look at everyone as important. I'm just not a shallow person. I'm not a shallow about anything. It's a little too deep for my friends. And so I just don't think of those things that you might need a brand or a persona or artistry or presentation, right? That's just not my go-to. Like other people, they're all artistry and presentation, and maybe not as much substance, right? And a balance is needed for everyone to, like, meet in the middle. So that was the inspiration, and that's what helped. And all of it was, like, just to make sure that I can get the message out to the people who need it. And then after that, on its own, it's really been blossoming, and other people's word of mouth recommending me has gotten me to the point where it's flourishing on its own because people are successful with it. Like, I meet people like, oh, I'm not done working, I got 3 houses. And they give me a hug. So, you know what I'm saying? So now it's starting on its own, right? And then those people call up 3 more people because now they're the person they know that has this knowledge and how to do it. That's literally happened. I've met people who've read the book and have 6 properties now. You know what I mean?
That's amazing. I definitely need to go get this book now.
I think I was channeling it. I don't know. Spirit was helping me with that one. Because I was bad. Well, buddy. Oh, I got that.
And I love that you mentioned that you listen to affirmations. Because I feel like affirmations are so underrated. You know.
Underrated. It's free.
Yeah.
It can change your life. Change my life. Literally can change your life. I had no. You said, how did this book come about? Right there. And it was not in my psyche at all. But I woke up one day with a surety, this is what I need to do.
And it worked out for you, and it's helping other people.
Mm-hmm. You're correct. I'm so glad you point that out. So I talk about energy in your business. What you put in is what you get out. Don't underestimate the energy, right? Creation, like creating, affirming you are a creator and being that person in your business. What do you want to see? And, you know, I always wanted to see people taking care of my community. Now, I didn't grow up there, but I grew up in one like it. And I care that other people who actually do care are investing in it. Not just people who want to make money, but people who actually do care about the outcome of the people and that house.
Right. Please tell everyone where they can book you for coaching. Are you available for coaching by chance?
Oh, yeah. I was just helping a guy in China today.
Awesome. So. International.
Well, in 2018, he reached out and we talked, and he was in China as a teacher, and 2 years later, he's like, girl, got my credit up, got my money up, let's do it. And I love that someone who may have seen me 4 years ago spent that time not falling off, but straightening up their finances and then being ready to go, and I like that they didn't fall off. So you can reach me at my website, which is affordablerealestateinvestments.com. That's my website, which will route you to our Facebook group with over 11,000 Black investors who are killing it, and they're posting every day. I've trained most of them, and they are just beautiful, helping other people. Or you can YouTube Affordable REI on YouTube and see some of the videos that I put out about the strategy, what's going on, what's working now. And or you can Google Lisa Phillips Real Estate Investing, and I generally come back up. Or you can find the book on Amazon. Under Investing in Rental Properties for Beginners. It's on 3 bestsellers list and Kindle, and has been since it launched in 2018. So very proud. I didn't expect that. But this smiling brown face apparently gets people to click. And it is. It's the only brown one up there. So. And I got a big old smile. And I'm just really pleased and honored that it's having an impact on, you know, people who look and feel like me, and others who don't look like me, but they're like, I hear what you're saying.
Right, and that's important.
Mm-hmm, it is. It's not just about money. There's bigger things sometimes.
Yes. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. You've given us so many amazing tips, and we're definitely going to check out that book. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm honored. Everyone, please take care, and I'm honored you guys had me here.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into another episode. This episode is brought to you by Popple. Popple is a digital business card that everyone needs. With a simple tap, your friends or business partner can instantly have access to all your social media accounts, music accounts, and payment platforms. Make sure to use promo code AmonMag for 20% off. As always, for more news and information like this, make sure to check out AmonMagazine.com. See you next week.